looking at your garbage can going, okay, what, I could just throw this stuff in there this one time, you know. Actually having legitimate ways for people to dispose of that, the recycle programs, the West Side neighborhoods here, which I was involved with, were the very first pilot program for the recycle program. And so a lot of great things have been done, but the Solid Waste Commission, I just wanted to stop in and say thank you. Thank you for doing it. And it's not low profile in my book. We have quite a few boards and commissions. This one is never low on my priority list. So I'm going to hand cards down if you would take one. If you ever want to have a chat or come and have a cup of coffee, just give me a buzz about this or anything else. And Pete, I think Pete was here when I first got here. Were you? No, you weren't here yet. It was George Seidel.
Well, George was.
Yeah.
It was George.
Yeah. you weren't around then.
And my husband, in his business, worked with George's dad because they were both in the hardware industry. So there's sort of a long connection here. But I remember in some of your early days, I don't know if you still do it, but you were interested in getting school children involved, and so one of the assignments you had was to go out into the schools and talk to the children about recycling and, you know, reuse and not wasting and all that. Have you ever heard him play the guitar again? You have to hear this.
What
he does a fabulous job. And the other thing I'm sure that you've all been to, which I think is really an exciting product, is at Esther Short Park, the two-day event, the Recycle Fair, what do we call it?
Recycled Arts Festival.
Yes. And it's one of my favorite events every year. It's amazing to see what can be done. And I'll just tell you this quick story. So about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, it was really hot. It was like 100 degrees every day for this event. And so the solid waste staff was out there weaving their magic, helping direct cars that were backing in to the pass to unload, and then at the end of the day, reload. And it was really an amazing event, 100 degrees, and they've been out there for 2 days. And that recycling event drew so many people, and it draws a lot of people to downtown, so it's a good event for everybody. And that event is about recycle, reuse, reduce waste, the mantra that we have. So anyway, I remember the SWAC with fondness, with sweat on my brow still coming in here. And I just wanted to say thank you, and we appreciate your work. And Pete, we appreciate your work. So I see you have a long agenda, and my cat thinks it's going to have dinner tonight. So if you don't mind, I will excuse myself.
Thank you for coming.
Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair, while we have a counselor in the room, we want to bring up item 6.
Oh, the rescind and confirm a motion on the Board of County Commissioners or the Columbian Advertising.
Okay.
Does anybody have an objection to changing the agenda?
No, I have no objection.
Thank you.
The reason I asked this to be put on there is you all saw we voted to ask the commissioners to advertise our household hazardous waste program in the Columbian. We wrote a motion to that effect. Mr. Benton and responded to it. Everybody got a copy of that. He did agree to, the way I read it, he did agree to put some ads in the Columbian. We've got some housekeeping on whether we want to send this to the Board of County Councilors or not. And with Jeannie here, I think it's probably, at least she knows that we wanted to make a recommendation to them. So it's open for discussion. What is your preference, folks?
So something I would like to say regarding that is the council has recently had discussions about renewing the contract with the Columbian. And I don't remember exactly where that ended up. It sounded like it was a decision that was pending. My stated preference was that we advertise in both for at least the transition period, because the Reflector has come to rely on the work, and they do have a broad distribution. They are a nice journalistic piece. They're a responsible newspaper. So,
which, the Reflector or the Columbian?
The Reflector, yes. Rather than move from the Reflector back to the Columbian, my recommendation to the board, which hasn't really been taken up yet, is to publish in both. And there may be some squawking about how much that costs, but I think it's a nice courtesy to, if we're going to transition, do something respectful toward everybody. I think the Columbian is a daily newspaper, and this doesn't talk to do I agree with everything they write every day. That's not a relevant issue. The relevant issue is their distribution. They have a very broad daily distribution, and the Reflector does a wonderful job, but it is a weekly newspaper. So the timing for publishing events gets more complicated for needing such a long advance period of time. If you have an upcoming event and it's in a month, you know, to get all the approvals and then get it to them in a ready form and get them to publish it and get it distributed on a weekly basis. So
Councilor Stewart, would a letter like this help move the conversation along, or would it cause
Well, I think that's a very good question. And as a counselor, what comes to my mind is if you have specifics about any of the programs that are managed through the Solid Waste Division, that you think can reach the more dense part of the population for their effectiveness. One of those I'm thinking about is household hazardous waste collection. The more dense people live together, and the more poison that gets on the ground. If people pour stuff on the ground, we're going to be drinking it, folks. That's sad truth. So anything that gets poured on the ground or put in the garbage and goes to a landfill and isn't properly disposed of, we'll be drinking it, if not today, in the future. So where we have so many people using so many chemicals and with so many needs of stuff that could really have an advantage for proper disposal, making sure that on a timely basis we reach that section of the population, I think would be really important. So my point is, if there are programs or projects that you're aware of that could benefit from having a daily distribution of a paper that, you know, you don't need to wait so long to get something published, that to me is completely valid reason for Solid Waste Advisory Commission to sign in, because right now it's kind of a politically volatile issue, but any group that has legitimate reason for the request, to your question, Ty, that's the key. So if you think about your programs, and a lot of them are put together a long, long time in advance, but even if they are, and even if it has time to get into the reflector, the rural population is not the only population that we're trying to reach. We're getting to be very dense, and there's sort of an urgency in my mind to get as much word out as we can. So in that context, I'd appreciate knowing what SWAC thinks. And especially because of your programs, and I guess because personally I know how important they are.
Do we have, Pete, a definite commitment of which dates and whatever for the Columbian? Don's letter talked about a lot of stuff, and then at the very end of it he referred to he would take what we said under advisement and advertise in the Columbian.
So part of the reason for the council discussing the change is legal notices. You might want to publicize something that's not a legal notice, but is a notice of a public event,
yes,
or whatever. You want that to reach the dense part of the population as soon as possible. And so the other part of the question is for legal notices, because with the county, it's kind of complicated. If we have to publish certain kinds of meetings, we have to get them to the reflector like 3 weeks in advance in order to ensure. But sometimes we have meetings that come up quicker than that. So that's one of the reasons internally that we're talking about it, is the amount of time it takes to get a public notice published in the newspaper of record, I think it's termed. And the county is finding some complication with that. That sometimes we need a meeting, but we have to hold off on it to make sure it gets published.
You've got public noticing requirements.
Yeah, and I still would prefer that we publish in both, because Clark County is really sort of the hub for all the cities and the urban area, or the rural area. So I don't know if that answered your question. That's the best answer I can give. So,
from my standpoint, that's all.
Pete, do we have an answer or a commitment as to what and when?
We don't have the actual what and when, and some of that is we're still waiting on our messaging, because we're going to expand the extra day, and we're waiting on an agreement to be signed. And so there's a couple of things we might be promoting. One is to promote all the events, collection events, and then the other is the additional hours that you can bring the hazardous waste in facilities. But to answer your question, we don't have a what and when and how much we're going to spend.
Okay. But do you feel like you have approval is Don given approval? Is the director given approval? Is that your interpretation of the letter that was sent?
The director has given approval to advertise the funding.
Okay.
I just had a hard time finding a reflector anywhere. I finally found one in a front liner in Salmon Creek, but I don't find it very many places.
Yeah, I get it delivered to me every week.
What's that?
I get it delivered to me every week.
Yeah, but you're up there.
I am.
I'm down here, so I don't get a see that. Like how they were doing they did the styrofoam, and I went to. Up there, and I stopped by to find out where they were. They always used to take the styrofoam, but now they can't. They're trying to find a place. And I said, "Oh, you've been telling people about this upcoming thing. We don't know anything about that." it was in probably the reflector, I'm guessing, but for a lot of people going, she says, we get asked all the time, and we didn't know about it, so I sent her the thing when I got there, because I had only 2 days to ban, so it is, again, it's for the people all over, it's just the whole county, and it's a lot of people go there just to try to get rid of their stuff, and they didn't know.
And one of the things on household hazardous waste, there also is a traveling program for that. I don't know what we call that, but where we have certain locations that people can bring their stuff to.
And that's going away.
Oh, is that going away?
Yes.
It's going away because of the cost expense. And what's being proposed is to have it go away and then opening up more hours at the transfer stations. Because at the transfer station, the fee to take care of the household hazardous waste is borne by the hauler. So I want to encourage people to come to the transfer stations by having more hours at the transfer stations rather than paying the fee that we have to pay to Stericycle at the collection facilities or at the household collection events. So then it's really kind of a cost savings as well as opening up more hours in the transfer station.
Okay, so I do know that the problems with, you know, finding a vacant parking lot and taking a bunch of household chemicals, then you have to get into this, well, this isn't its original container. And what actually is in here? And I know that those questions have been going on for years about, although some rural residents felt that was convenient, it created all kinds of problems. And then we do have to worry about the people that are handling that. And then what their level of knowledge is about, at that point, how do you store it together? Certain things are not good together, and all that knowledge. So it, as long as the hours at the transfer center can be expanded.
Well, that was, I think, our thoughts. Is to
part of what we're trying to accomplish with this letter is to have the Columbian as one of the tools for our outreach efforts to educate people about solid waste-related programs.
I think that's crucial. It is crucial because most people aren't mean or stupid. They don't dispose of it illegally or improperly.
They're just uninformed.
Because they're lazy or because it's not affordable. It's they just don't know. They don't know the importance.
Right.
And I completely agree with you, making the importance of proper disposal clear for our future and our children's future is crucial.
And we would want to have the Columbian as a tool that we can use selectively to promote programs, household hazardous waste or other programs.
So okay. I do believe the council may revisit this.
As a counselor, and I hate to put you on the spot, do you...
You do not. I know you. Go ahead.
I'm guessing that you would really rather have us keep a line of communication between this group and your group, not to circumvent staff, not to go around staff, not to throw staff under the bus, but that we do have the responsibility to go to you and say, hey, this is what we would like to do. This is a recommendation, which is part of our charter, to you. Do you as a counselor want us to do that?
Well, I think different counselors might give you different answers. So what I say is that there is an RCW and a WAC at the state level that creates this body. And then it is county code. I don't know what the code number is. but there's also a county code that sets up the structure and the level of responsibility and that sort of thing. So that means we take this body seriously. And I think normally, if the council or commission has a desire, you should be able to take it to staff. And if you're concerned about something, you know, the staff can communicate with us. But I don't have a hard and fast rule about that, because I want to keep my door of communication open all the time. And I don't want people to have to jump through a line of hoops in order to feel that they could talk to me. So what I believe is that we need to advertise in both newspapers, and that each have benefits to us advertising in them, and that for turnaround time and reaching a large part of the population, I don't know that the law prevents us from having two newspapers of record.
It doesn't.
I don't believe it does. So I think that's a responsible action. And I do remember that not too long ago we discussed, it probably came up in a less formal process, like in our board time, things get thrown out, just kind of tossed around. And then I didn't see anything come forward, but...
With that jump started?
Huh?
If you got that, with that jump started, another conversation?
I'd be glad to take it back and talk to the other counselors. And as long as I understand that if they feel, I'm just going to be real honest, if they feel like there's political fooling around, they'll back off. But if there's a legitimate reason, and I have that legitimate reason, if you can tell me why, other than the common sense, I can take back to them and say, look, here's what this commission would like to do, and here's why. The Columbian reaches a large part of the population. It reaches them on a faster basis, and it is focused on the more dense part of the city, which, you know, the greater the population, the more impact we have in all ways. So I would be glad to take that message back to them. If there are more specific reasons, it would be important for me to have them.
Does this, us handing this letter to Councillor Stewart, does this cause more problems for you than what it solves?
I won't allow that. I won't allow that to happen. I assure you.
I would rather take a vote on what the group would like to do.
Yes.
And see it go through. Yes, I appreciate your offer, but I'd like to see it go through the
process.
The normal, what I would call the normal channels.
And I completely agree. If you're asking me if when it gets there,
what the reception will be.
Yeah. Well, I think if the council understands why you're asking for it, and they can rule out people screwing around in political motivations, which I don't have any senses going on here, then it shouldn't be a problem for the council to look at this. And I think it's going to come back anyway. So I already supported, before I came in this room, using both I didn't even know it was a question or an issue when I came in. So I already feel that both newspapers should be used.
I'd like to move this along because Ty's going to leave.
Sorry.
Do we have further discussion, or do we want to take a vote? I'd like to include Ty in the vote if we're going to have it. Or what's your question, folks? We made the motion. Just write the letter. The letter's written. To send it directly to the counselors. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. I did. I'm sorry.
I'll yell next time.
You get old, you get deaf.
I resent that.
I would like to take a moment, and for the life of me, I cannot remember this lady's name. She works with Waste Connections.
Yes.
Customer service manager, if I remember right.
Yes. Nina Kalafa, now Starkey.
Yeah. Yes. Nina's obviously taking Scott's position.
Yes, last minute. I apologize for being late.
Scott.
Is what?
Scott Campbell usually comes.
Yeah, she's just taking. Scott must have gotten another night off. That's twice this year.
Yeah. Right?
Two nights?
Two nights in the last 12 months. Thank you for coming.
Hey, nice. Glad to be here. Thanks, everybody.
Be careful.
Thanks for your good work. So I'm going to go beat those guys away from my car out there. Jeez. Thank you again.
Thank you. You want someone to go out with you?
Well, I walk her up.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for coming, Judy. Sorry to jump.
You're up.
Yeah. Why don't you slide around here? I know it's a couple
of
slides.
Yeah, no,
all the names are here, so that way we
come around. Yeah, we just want to share, or I guess are they?
Anita and Rich, why don't you guys?
Why don't you just slide up?
Well, all right. Why don't we slide you guys down this way?
Just sit there. I think it needs to be bigger.
Thanks.
Huh?
First part, don't worry.
See you last.
Yeah. Keep the swag together.
Oh, okay. You have to go to.
Did you talk?
Right here.
Where you got them?
I've got one. I've got a letter.
Dead over there.
Bruce Smith.
You guys need some snacks? Everyone, where did that come back? She's one of our new hires. She's running for Recycle Day events.
All right. Sorry, I was a little late. I think I know everyone knows who I am. Chuck Harmon, Clark County Public Health. Not a lot tonight. One is that we completed the permitting process for out of the city of Shingle for the they were going to be collecting cleanup, you know, catch basin cleanup waste and taking it. They used to take it out to the Whatley facility, it's called the Whatley Pit, where a lot of other municipalities take their cleanup. So that permitting process was completed, I think. There were just a few comments for some changes on the facility. So we completed that. There was a facility that Melissa sort of tracked down by following a truck that was taking materials, and then a lot of the yard debris was going up to a place called Northern Resources up in Amboy. And so she got them to apply for so they were doing it. She got them. They needed to apply for not a permit, because you're allowed to operate, but it's called an exempt. You're exempt from permitting, but you're still not exempt from a lot of other requirements. And the review process there. Let me get the name of the place out. I didn't write it down in my notes, but basically, then she also did a review. She does a review with all the other local agencies, including code enforcement. The place is not zoned to collect yard debris. And that's what they were taking. So she just sent an email, I think yesterday, telling them they have to stop that activity. They would have to go through the rest of the zoning process and land use process before they'd be able to do it again. So that's a recent action that she took. And I got to double check to make sure you guys. You guys are notified on that.
Yes, and we responded.
Right. Okay. Great. I think the only other things I wanted to two other things I wanted to note. One was, so there's a program called Local Source Control, which is mostly around stormwater, and is a program that was really focused on the Puget Sound area and all of the important resources in Puget Sound, but it's since been expanded to the Spokane area and to the Lower Columbia River. And so our person who was doing site hazard assessment work, Brian DeDonker, because those funds for the site hazard assessment went away because of loss of funds in MACA, we and Environmental Services stormwater team also got funding out of the local source control, so they're implementing that across the county. Public Health got funding for about 0.75 FTE to also implement it, and so and that program is about going into businesses and doing technical assistance on what hazardous substances do they have on site that they're managing. Small quality generators, all the larger types of generators are already handled through ecology and other permitting processes, oversight processes. And so right now we're developing a plan, and Brian is doing that work and what we're focused on from health, because Environmental Services services the rest of the unincorporated county. We're going to work with all the municipalities, Richfield, Le Center, Camas, Washougal, Yakult, et cetera, and Vancouver, City of Vancouver, to go out and visit individual businesses. We're going to try to focus in on other aspects of where there are vulnerable communities, so like environmental justice communities, communities that are more prevalent to health issues. And the idea, again, is to go in, provide technical assistance. It's not a regulatory program. To go in, review their waste practices, what they're doing. It's totally voluntary, too. We can knock on the door, and they can say, no, I don't want you coming inside. But that's a program that he'll begin implementing in the field probably next month, start visiting businesses. And it also came with spill kits. It's from the funding from Ecology. They provided them. We got a little storeroom now that's got a bunch of these little spill kits that he can give to these businesses. But also, again, hopefully to get them to properly dispose of their waste, inform them about alternatives to waste, look for, you know, could there be exposures both just to local businesses, local residents, if there's residents nearby. But the other focus, a larger focus, and more resources that are at Environmental Services and Stormwater, is also looking at stormwater sources again to protect runoff that might be contaminated. And so again, that's a new, brand new program. We just kind of got it rolling in January. But like I said, by next month, Brian will be implementing that. So I think at a future meeting, we can talk to you a little bit about what he's finding and learning out there. The last thing that I mentioned at the last meeting, that I'd hoped I'd have something ready for you to look at, is the Circle C landfill. It's about an 8-acre. I know some of you know more. There's still people that know a lot more about it than me, but it's a small landfill that was mostly construction debris, inert materials. It's been closed for over 20 years. The current owners, who are the son and daughter of the prior operator of the facility, they've been on a post-closure permit for those 20 years. They've asked if they can exit that permit. We've been working, and we're getting ready. We're set up to meet with Ecology next week. I still haven't had a chance to sit down with Dr. Melnick, the health officer, but basically there's several parameters that are covered under that permit that are based on monitoring of settlement and cover integrity. So, you know, as the waste break down over time, you can have differential settlement, things like that. I mean, there's been issues like that out at Leitner, so I think you guys have heard and seen some of that, so you get that. Cover integrity, so the landfill has an impervious cap, which has soil and all that. So again, you want to make sure that cap stays in place and that the structural integrity of the surface. So that's one area that we're trying to develop criteria so that, and under the permit, that's more a visual thing. The second area is gas production. So as you guys know, everyone, or most of you know, as those organic matter breaks down, produces methane in the anaerobic environment. This facility, I don't know the exact timeline, but for quite a few years, they haven't run their gas burner because they weren't generating enough gas for it to keep running. But they still have several passive vents. But they actually haven't measured gas in it for quite a while. So under that criteria, we working through what is in the WAC for gas, we're using the state's criteria that if the gas levels, if they go back and measure them, are below certain criteria, then and they've got to meet all these criteria in the very end, that we could then say, oh yeah, you don't have to monitor gas and you can get out of the permit. The other two factors, the other two parameters we're looking at is leachate production and leachate concentrations. So there's a leachate collection system. So we want to know what are the constituents in there. Secondly, is groundwater one of the things? They only have one downgrading groundwater well at that facility. Again, this was a decision made a long time ago. I'm not sure why. I'll just tell you where we think we're headed, because basically when we're done kind of vetting this, both with ecology, well, first with Dr. Melnick, with ecology, and then with you folks, once I've got pretty firm numbers, but basically everything that we're looking at says they're going to need to add more downgradient wells. We can't use one well to make a decision about what is the landfill still impacting groundwater or surface waters, because again, it's in kind of a narrow canyon. It's at the top of a narrow canyon near La Center. So we're going to look at both groundwater drinking water protection criteria and surface water protection criteria to establish, okay, if we go to groundwater and we go to leachate and all the parameters that we would, for things like iron, manganese, I don't think they have any chemical waste in there. If you meet all these parameters, then again, you probably don't need to do that monitoring anymore. And if that and all the other things are met, you get out of the permit. So that's the approach we're taking. We're trying to be responsive to their request, but in the end, we have to be able to say you no longer need this permit if we have enough data and information that indicates that the landfill is no longer posing a public safety or public health or environmental threat. And so that's the path that, and it's a new thing because, again, we're going to meet with ecology next week, but I don't think ecology has ever closed a post-closure permit. So we're trying to, I think we're breaking some new ground, but obviously we're not going to do it in a vacuum. There's going to be a very public process. But I was hoping that I could bring you the table that has our initial proposal. And again, I think, again, it's going to be, we're going to get feedback from you guys. We'll probably get some feedback from ecology. I want everyone to understand I'm trying to propose a path forward, but obviously we need to listen and address the concerns, or if for some reason we haven't thought of something to address. But in the end, what we want to do is give them a list. This is what you have to be able to do if you want us to terminate this permit.
Do you have a sense of how long it'll take you to generate that criteria list?
Well, I've got most of it. But I got to make sure my boss is comfortable with what I'm trying to do. I mean, I've told him a little bit about it, but I want to show him some of the numbers. All the numbers that we have, we didn't make up. They all exist somewhere,
right?
Like Safe Drinking Water Act, Clean Water Act, methane gas levels, et cetera. Is that?
Well, the only reason I ask is what you could do is if you're in a place that you feel comfortable presenting it to us, you could do it in advance of the meeting so we can take a look at it and
have
a conversation.
Yeah.
When you're ready.
No, and I really hoped I would have done it, been able to send it to you today, and
right.
I just didn't, and the staff was working on some things, and they had some concerns. But I want this to be transparent.
Absolutely.
So people can kind of see where we're headed and what we're proposing.
Yeah.
Again, in the end, and I don't think the owners, I mean, I don't read their mind. I mean, I don't think they're going to be happy with some of the answers. And again, we're going to have to do this in the public sphere because it's near the center. You know, there's public, you know, we drink the groundwater. I mean, again, I'm sure some of you have seen the news about the concerns about the wastewater system that's been talked about at the casino.
Yeah.
I would think of the landfill, they would have similar concerns. We don't want someone to end a permit or walk away from the landfill without ensuring that it's not going to pose a threat. And that's not what we're going to do. But we need to let people know what we're doing. We need to let them see the numbers. The thing I'm kind of worried about, Steve, is where you put it out and it's real preliminary and someone hasn't seen it yet. And then they're like, hey, I just saw these numbers out there. And how come you didn't let me know about this first? The other thing is we're setting up a meeting with the city of La Center. I want to sit down with them, their city manager, whoever, the public works person, tell them what we're doing also, because again, I don't want them to feel like
right.
We're marching down a path and they don't even know that we're doing it.
When you're ready, bring it back to us.
No, but not before. I'm very close.
Okay.
Right. And again, the only thing I didn't mention specifically, but that's in here, are like institutional controls. I mean, the real struggle with the landfill is, and I dealt with some of this in my prior work in Oregon, right? It's like a geological feature now. I mean, people that deal with landfills, because I've run into this, you can't predict. Like, you don't know exactly everything that's in it. You can't say when stuff's going to break down. And so the other thing is certain institutional controls, like for the landfill stability and settlement. I mean, no one in this room and no one could say, oh, I know that for the next 50 to 60 years there won't be differential settlement of that landfill. Now, does that mean that we have to hold the landowner to a $5,000 a year permit to continue to... No, let's develop... So my proposal is let's develop an institutional control that says, you know, the goat runs with the land and future owners, that at least says you don't have to have a permit, but if you observe, and I don't know, the exact wording will have to get worked out, but if you observe any significant settlement or differential settlement or indicators that the CAPA's integrity has been compromised, then you'll have to hire a geotechnical engineer, do an analysis, and if it needs to be, return it back to the state where it's no longer failing. It's just a tool that, and I don't see how in a landfill you don't establish something like that because you just don't know what's going to happen in the future. But it's a way to establish some kind of control, some kind of attention to that matter.
Bring it back to us when you're ready.
Yeah. I just want to let you know that I'm getting close in that. How I'm going at it.
Making history.
Yeah, hopefully the right kind of history.
It will be good history. Anything else?
That's it.
Can I ask a quick question, Rick?
Pardon?
Can I ask a quick question?
Oh, yeah.
We got this letter last, I think it was last meeting, on the Ruppner landfill.
Yeah.
And I just had one question. Maybe I didn't listen. It said they're going to require the site to the elevations required under the permits. And then it says that the two properties may be completed at a grade of 29 feet, which is 2 feet above the 100 design flood elevation. It says it is our understanding. Is that everybody's understanding? I'm just wondering if when it says it's our understanding, or is this person that we're writing the letter to, is he agreeing with that?
That's a great catch on the wording. I mean, what I'm saying, so that letter is to the city of Vancouver, who we deferred oversight of the decommissioning and completion of those landfills under a grading permit and a shoreline permit, instead of us establishing some kind of oversight of the landfill decommissioning. And so there was some questions about what does completion of, and there's a consent decree that's overseeing the whole thing. So we're just trying to be clear. So what that's intended is to say this is what we will need as a county, because part of the consent decree is we have to sign off on it. So I'm just trying to lay out that this is what we believe has to be completed before we can offer a letter of concurrence that would close the consent decree, the Clark County.
So we don't know if they agree with it or not yet.
I have not heard from them.
Okay.
I mean, again, those permits, if you read all the requirements, say 29 feet, you know, 2 feet above sea level, and that the sites are fully completed to those elevations. And so I'm just trying to be clear about it.
I didn't,
and I haven't heard back from anyone from the city one way or the other about that.
I just see it's our understanding, and I wonder if that's everybody's understanding or...
Well, the way I view this letter is you're setting out the requirements for closing out the permits. And you're saying, these are the requirements. This is what you have to do.
Well, that's not what it says, though.
Well, really, Steve, I mean, what we're saying, and again, I worked with the prosecuting attorney's office to make sure that, because it's a consent decree, it's a legal document.
Right.
The county... One of the elements to get to close that consent decree, the court is going to look for a letter from the county that says, yes, they have met all the requirements.
Right.
And that's what I'm telling them. This is what we will need to see before we will write a letter like that.
That's exactly what I mean.
Right.
It's like, this is what you're...
Our understanding. What's your understanding?
No, I mean, that's a great catch. I can see that.
This is not a negotiation.
The whole program, the main part of the site, that's the standards for that.
Right.
The site that's already developed and already built on had to meet those criteria of the 29 feet to get their building permits. this just says the two pits, the lagoon and the actual landfill itself, will be filled in and brought up to that 29-foot elevation. That was my point in the beginning. Mm-hmm. When I went down there to look at it, it was two pits with various debris in the pits. Didn't see a whole lot of movement. That's what triggered it for me to bring it up. The whole, everything from Lower River Road, basically, that's in part of this, north, has got to be all the same grade. I just didn't want to walk away from the pits. Anything else? Rich, you're up.
The only thing I've got is we're starting our spring cleanup coupon program in first of early April. They go out and the Waste Connections bill comes out to city residents in March of April. So that allows city residents to dispose of two loads of yard debris up to four tires, I think, through June. So that's an ongoing program. Only thing coming up this month.
You got good press on the plastic bags.
Oh, yes.
It was written in the Columbian.
So the report on that should be coming out. We should have that available soon. I don't know if you guys want to see that. It's like, a 10, 12-page report, something like that. I'm happy to forward that or link or something if you all want to see that. It gives a little more detail. It was really the pilot program we did with Safeway back in September, October.
I'd like to see the link to it at least, so you can take a look at it.
So when we get that available, we'll shoot you all a link.
Anything else?
No.
Thanks for the coupons. Nina, you're up.
I don't have
it. Okay, well, can you just quickly talk about how many CSRs you have and how many calls they take?
Oh, my gosh.
You know I love this.
I know you love it. So we have a team of 30, including myself, so I have 29 direct reports, and we take about 1,100 calls per day to the call center, yeah. And we respond to about 1,100 emails a month, unless we have something weird come up, like weather. But we maintain our call quality based on a third-party quality program. We are eighth in the nation for all Waste Connections, 100 being the top score. Our average for last year was 93.6. So kind of tough on my people, but we love our customers. So.
That's great.
Yeah,
every CSR takes how many a day?
They're taking about 60 calls per day on average, each person.
It's amazing. People in this community want to talk garbage.
We love talking to our neighbors. We love talking to our neighbors.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You guys do a great job.
Thanks.
And a lot of folks outsource those types of customer service. They'll have a call center in Houston. Or
this is a call center with real people in in our neighborhood.
Yeah. They really do care.
We're proud of that.
You're up, Pete.
Just a couple quick things. Asbestos is kind of a hot ticket item. I just forwarded something to Chuck. Metro is, and Rich may know more than that than I do. Metro screening all those of construction demolition coming into their transfer stations over in the Portland area. And they are requiring paperwork for loads with suspect materials. Sending them away until they have that material filled out. And what's challenging with asbestos, which I didn't know, is that they used it for characteristic reasons, but it's also naturally occurring. So it's in gypsum, it's in just a lot of materials that folks may not even know it's in there. And the rate could quadruple. So if we're paying $80, it'd be, I don't know what they were saying, within $300. Ton of asbestos-related material. So that's going to trickle into our facilities as well, which is something we'll want to keep close to.
It's in a lot of C&D stuff, linoleum tile, And the old adhesives that they use?
The mastics.
And then it's in insulation, and it's in the drywall.
Yep.
It's a very inexact inspection and determination over there right now. I've got guys that are calling me to rent roll-off trucks because they've got 8 or 10 or 12 boxes sitting that somebody thought was contaminated and they can't find them. You've got to be, if anybody wants a consulting job, put on your asbestos abatement hat and go over and start inspecting boxes.
Yep. And then send them our way.
There is an easy way to take care of asbestos, but the problem that I've been seeing so far is the naturally occurring asbestos, or the little bit of amounts from this or that, or the mastics, the glues, the whatever. Mm-hmm. And an overzealous enforcement person is, from the collection side, creating a nightmare. Now, if you got a building you're tearing down with asbestos wrapped on your heating pipes, you know what that program is. You've got people that do that for a living. Mm-hmm. And then they just... It's an overreach of Metro, in my opinion.
I deal with it all the time.
Yeah, you would. But there are people to do that. There are ways to do that. When Waste Connections did the process of taking out all the tiles of the cooling tower at Trojan, all was treated as asbestos. Huge, huge project, but everybody knew what they had to do. No, it was not cheap, let me tell you. It was not a cheap program. I got a question under this, and it might not be the time to bring it up. Where are we on the Leitner campus sale?
I will. Okay. Can I segue into that?
Fine, whatever.
The news is you guys were hoping to have the next WAC in April. We're all going to be away meeting at the transfer station out on Highway 503, Central Transfer Recycling. And then we go back to East Ridge, which is where Nina's folks are, which is just down the street from there. And Mike will be running that, and he will have hopefully some more updates. We've got the 30-acre Koski site, which is what I think you're referring to. Are you referring to the 70-acre landfill?
No, I was referring to the Leitner campus.
Leitner campus is Koski, yes.
Okay.
So that's the 30 acres of light industrial. It's just been master planned. We're using a consultant, Paul Foster, and it looks great. And so it's basically pushed up to community development because now it's just getting that, getting it on the market. And so those blueprints just came out, and we will get you those. It's the same thing we've talked about, just a master planned, here's what we want this to look like, and then we sell it off, and I don't think we're going to have covenants, but you know, there'll be some control on what they can do with that site.
I've had a couple of people ask me, when is it going to be available to bid on, or how do they get on the list to... They've got the resources to buy it.
Yes, they should contact Mike, and we're getting in this big push because the market is hot. So we want to get that out the door.
Well, is it going to go to bid, or is it going to, how is it going to be?
What's the process?
Mike's going to have more answers on this. This is his baby. He has ushered this thing all the way along. It's been a big, big, long, arduous task, but... there are still just a couple test pits that we may need to go in and do. We've already done the geo work on those where they hit the burn areas, so we just need to make sure everything's clean. We're certain it is. But the process would be just however we get rid of property, I mean, it would be probably an auction or a bid.
Well, has it been declared surplus?
No, it wouldn't be declared a surplus. I think we would just go to market. Mike's going to have the information. I don't have the actual process.
I was just asked to find out how they can get there.
I know
they shot at it.
You know, we're cubemates, so I know he's working away on this one, and it'll be happening this year for sure. As soon as possible.
I was remiss in introducing Bernadette Donald, who is one of our staff members. We hired six new staff on our team.
Welcome.
And Bernadette comes from Stanley, Blackenham.
Yes.
Where she was her environmental health and safety officer, did a lot of cultural change and really tightened up the safety ship. I know you have some great metrics on that to share after meeting. But she oversees the Recycle Day events that we do out in the communities, and then also works quite a bit with schools and our Washington Green School program. She's also working with Waste Connections on some of their environmental management system stuff using her industry skills. So we're lucky to have Bernadette on board, and she'll be here kind of watching our hazardous waste and then can also answer any questions on the collection piece. So just very briefly, there were two bills of significance that I think, I mean, probably many more for you guys, but one was about funding when we get our grant dollars from the Model Toxics Control Act. I sent you that article. I signed up. It's kind of a neat little feature. If you're interested in being a policy wonk, you can go on and hit that little email me button, and then they'll send you any updates live. And I haven't heard anything on that, so I don't know if that's good news or bad news. And the same is true, but bad news, on the paint care, HB 1571, that never made it out of Senator Erickson's committee. I think that's the third time it's gone down. And the good news, though, is Stericycle in Washougal still wants to get a jump on the game. They see that it's big money, good for their business. And I have continually heard that July will be when they'll be processing paint locally. So again, a big win for this group, and we'll keep you posted as I hear more. DEQ is raising their tip fee. DEQ is raising our tip fee. I think 58 cents is the first increment. I think July 1 we'll be seeing, which is a pass-through, and that's to fund some programs on the Oregon side because we dispose of our trash in Oregon, a little bit held hostage. So we'll be paying fees to them to do programs over in Oregon. Cost of doing business.
Well, what percentages are sort of the amount? I mean, from what to what?
We're in the 80s. See, let's say $4 a ton now. So it's not much, but it's creeping up. And we did based on CPIs and projections, we were looking at hitting $100 tip fee in 8 years. So
I think if you translate the 52 cents, it comes out to about 3 cents per household per month, just for the regular curbside customer.
But it does speed up our annual compounding growth of the tip fee itself. So $100 tip fees are not too long away unless something changes in our system. And our showcase is coming up. I know some of you have signed up, which I appreciate, on March 24th at the Utility Barracks. That's what I've got.
Your waste
stream. Waste stream analysis. So we have a very comprehensive contract with Columbia Resource Company, which has been purchased. It's still a separate entity, but it's owned by Waste Connections. They manage the three transfer stations. In that contract, we are required every 5 years to do a comprehensive waste stream analysis. That's sorting everyone's garbage that's going in their can or in the dumpster or in the drop box or the compactor. And in the past, we've separated 30-plus material types, all different types of plastics, metals, papers. And we have been getting pretty similar data back. And the sort cost is about $75,000 a year. And we have a pretty tight budget, as you know. So we talked with the contractor. We've talked with the City of Vancouver looking at focusing in, still doing some analysis of our waste stream, but really looking at the residual waste that comes out of our blue recycle carts. And right now, we're in that 15 to 20% reject. And this would give us a better handle on what's coming, that's being picked as garbage, There's three areas through that sorting process as it moves along the conveyor belts that can come out as garbage. So we'll be looking at all those waste materials. And we'll be doing that in conjunction with our June allocation study, which is when we take a sample load and find out how much is aluminum, how much is glass, how much is cardboard, how much is paper. And then that directly goes back to how we get our revenue checks every quarter. So that's an important study. We have a methodology we follow on that. So there'll be some more information forthcoming through that, and we are going to, other folks are doing some of these very comprehensive sorts of their garbage. We're going to do a literature research and see if things have changed. There's been some packaging changes with those multi-layer packaging that you can find baby food in and applesauce. So we'll keep our eye on it. So that's the waste stream analysis update.
Thank you. Kim?
Swap spots here.
So you all should have gotten this, okay? If not, I included it in the packet. So, so I'm going to go through it real quick in case you guys had any questions or concerns. Thank you. So as you know, we're not going to be doing the hazard waste collection at local events for a number of reasons. We'll still be doing the paint for our paint take-back program, and we'll be increasing an additional day at the central transfer. So the data that is in here comes from a variety of different sources, the main source being our Stericycle invoices that we get, and the transfer station, we get those as well. So, and the CRC, and we kind of like share those invoices. They also get invoices from thermal fluids, but they kind of have a different methodology. So as you saw, like in this paper, I excluded oil and antifreeze for a variety of reasons. Yeah, and then the participant numbers. And so when we talk about the recycle day events, that is solely participants that came for the hazardous waste. So at each station we track participants, and then we do an overall participant as well. So when I say participants for the recycle day events, it's solely people that came for HHW. Or, you know, HHW and something else. So there were a lot of concerns with the data. For example, the manifest, and I talked to Stericycle about this, and this is an industry standard, is that there's the driver sort of estimates the total weight of the material when they pick it up. They don't actually weigh it. And this is for all similar companies throughout this region, at least. This is how they do it. So unfortunately, we don't have like a true weight on this material, but it's a pretty good estimate, and it's about as close as we're going to get to actual numbers. But because of that, there is a lot of variability. And then another factor.
Huh? So just, I mean, that's curious to me. I mean, there's usually, at most of these places, there's a scale, right? Mm-hmm. And is it just that?
Well, they pack it with kitty litter and all these other things. Okay.
You don't know what the material is and what the packing material is.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. And then, especially for our events, they're mobile. And so it's hard
there's
to,
no
like,
scale there.
And it's, like, very fast-paced, get that stuff, treated the way it needs to be. But, yeah, I find problems with that, too. And then an additional factor is the orphan waste. So at the transfer stations, if the spotters that are there on the tip floor, if they happen to see, you know, something in the that's been disposed of, they'll take it out and take it to the facility. And there's not really a way to track that. So we don't really know where it came from. If it's commercial, we don't really know how many people that came from. If there's six cans there, was it six people or was there one person? We don't know. So that's also a compounding factor in the data. And then additionally, at Central Transfer, the paint that's collected through the paint store program is lumped in with the Stericycle invoice that we get. So stir up the cycle invoice for paint will include not just what was dropped off and not just the orphan waste, but also what was dropped off for the paint take back program.
And can I add on that one? We have 7 paint stores that folks can bring their paint to whenever those paint stores are open. So Miller Paints, the
there's Rada.
And so all of that paint gets collected by Stericycle, and they bring it to Central Transfer Station, and then it's added into that mix, and it's not weighed. So again, just another variability that we're trying to normalize.
And I guess I should back up a little. One of the reasons we're doing this is trying to figure out a baseline for this transition that's happening, seeing if what kind of increases might occur at transfer stations, if any, and just kind of understand what people were dropping off at our events that maybe they need more help with. Oh, and then batteries, similar to paint, the batteries for the date for the Stericycle invoices includes all the curbside materials, and as well as oil and antifreeze is lumped in for the thermal fluids invoices. Oh, that's that part. And then at the transfer stations, it's nice that the oil and antifreeze are separate, but at our mobile events, it was lumped into bulk fuels, and there wasn't any way to separate that data from all of the bulk fuels, so that was another area that we had to cancel out. And then electronic waste, we don't collect that as hazardous waste at the recycled events, nor sharps and medications.
What's sharps?
Like needles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought, but I never heard of call sharps before.
Oh. I guess needles sounds too scary. Yeah, I don't know. but what's great about the original data, which is I think the first section, is that you can kind of look at, you know, just the recycle day events or just the transfer stations and kind of get an idea of what people are dropping off, which is great to know. And as you can see, paint or both is incredibly high. Materials cost more to dispose of than others. That's like how the wedges start changing. If you have any questions at all, you can just kind of go through it.
Actually, can you go back to that one? Because that's the big number where the disposal cost from the transfer stations that folks, the 12,000 participants a year are bringing in. And with labor on top of that, I heard about $750,000. So it's a very expensive operation to manage and get rid of this. When we've been out doing our collection day events, we've just been making it easier for folks, and that's not the message we want to send. And as a result, we've never really keyed in on these data points. So now that we're alerting folks that there is a significant cost, and a big chunk of it's paint, we can really start to try to ratchet this down if it's not an efficient way to handle this stuff. And that is big money on the table that can be used.
Yeah, so the next few pages are all those materials we talked about. I excluded everything, with the exception, because it's such a huge amount, of the paint is by far the most, not only the most prevalent, but the most costly. And so trying to include it would be beneficial. So what I did, well, I mean, I don't know if you want me to go through what I did, but
if you can refer to the page we should be looking at. Mm-hmm. This is page 7.
Yes, here's some. So we do get one of the workers at Stericycle, he invoices, or he emails me every time he goes and picks up paint at the paint stores, and he lets me know how much the driver estimated for weight for each store, so we can kind of track which stores are really popular, which ones aren't, and where we can move on. So I got those totals and I subtracted them from the totals at the transfer station to kind of estimate how much was actually transfer station material. And then, I keep pointing to you. And so, and then I did a percentage of that and thus removed that percentage from the cost as well, assuming for just disposal. So the labor cost stayed the same, because no matter what, that labor cost is going to be the same. But just the disposal cost, I subtracted that from. So this is, in my opinion, probably the best charts to look at are these ones, including the paint, if we want to compare the two different styles of the mobile facility versus the fixed facility. So this is recycling data.
Did you?
Yeah. And then the following page is the transfer station. And if you want to, so the actuals are just the things that I felt most confident in, which are the Stericycle data. But again, it's not really, I think, best for comparative purposes, because paint is such a huge issue. So I hope that this chart is kind of what you found most interesting, this last page, the summary. It goes over the cost per participant, the pounds per participant, cost per pound, and we can really then look into these issues. And so the top section is the disposal cost, and then the labor, and then the total cost, and I tried to break those out to, you know, cost per participant, cost per pound, so we can kind of see the different behaviors that people were experiencing at those.
And those, about a third of the way down, there's HHW facility or station participants. I think that's an important number. Correct me if I'm wrong, you know, we were, in 2015, less than 2,000 we served through our recycle day events. And we had 14,000 coming through the fixed facilities. So we really want to invest in where folks are going. And I think we're on a good path to track that number and see how we're doing. So.
So the summary is, it's about 2 to 1 in terms of cost, and the volume is a factor of 10 or more in terms of participants. That's what I come away with.
You can serve 10 times the people for half the cost.
Yeah. On a unit basis.
Yes.
The aggregate cost is maybe more, but yeah. On a unit basis, it's more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we've been saying.
Yeah.
Now we've got the numbers
to
back it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is what we started 2 years ago to.
Yeah. And Kim has done a great job pulling these numbers together. Pretty easy task, as you can tell, just a lot of variables and unknowns.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys can guess, but I have a scientific background. I worked in a research lab and stuff like that, so it's kind of like I zone in on all these variables and, you know, areas where the data can be not so good.
Right.
And try to exclude it.
Try to isolate them. Yeah, control for them.
So, yeah, I'm just
good work.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice.
So I know our next area is HHW collection on the agenda.
Yep.
So I think it's kind of related, so I'll leave this out. Do you have any questions for me on
Okay. Well, if you have any questions, feel free.
So this was just to have more feedback in case, because we didn't know what the numbers were going to be, so we brought them here.
Yeah.
So we don't need to belabor it if we feel comfortable with the direction we're heading in, and we continue to move forward if we wanted to.
I think the direction is where we all expected we were going to go, is it's getting the best bang for our dollars. I mean, I think that we did a lot of awareness with the collection facility or collection sites, your special collection sites. But I think if we can extend the hours and make people, educate people more and more and more, take it to the transfer station, make it easy to get it to the transfer station. And if we have to spend a few of those dollars saved to pay for a couple more hours for the transfer station, let's do that. It's the best value for the money. Because the last thing we want is to stuff poured on the ground or left here or there or put an abandoned building. And I mean, we all know the horror stories of this stuff.
Yes. I think that's it. We will take your recommendation on getting our advertising and marketing going.
Yeah.
We are looking at an estimate of about $30,000 per year to add that additional day. And again, this is really being done with grant funds as a pilot, just to establish what those costs are, and then we can negotiate with the contractor if needed under our contract terms of other additional work. So that is where we're heading, and if we need additional days on top of that, we can keep up. But we want to make it easy and get folks to the transfer station, as you said.
Okay. You will be getting us all notices as to where to meet for the next meeting.
Yes, we will have that all dialed in. Yep, with Vance, that's your take back to Scott. We're touring Central Transfer Station. And I think, is it April? Is Thursday April 1st?
First is Friday.
First, okay. Friday.
So
yeah.
I'll be on the plane. That's why I know.
Okay. Yes, so we'll meet there. It's getting later, getting lighter.
Later.
I don't know, is 6 o'clock still the earliest we could go?
Well, daylight savings time is going to be later, about this month. It is, we got an extra hour of evening.
Yeah. I think if we meet at 6, we're good. Mm-hmm. You know, we can tour the site, 6 to 6:30, 6:45, make it to the meeting. Space, go from 7 to 7:30, 7 to 8.
And do we want to take individual vehicles, or do you want to do a county van, or how's that best going to work getting into the transfer station?
I think what we'll do, and that's good, and we'll work through the logistics, but we'll have everyone meet at East Ridge, which is where you're going to end up, and then we'll have the vans, and we'll shuttle right to the door, come back, and then you can head up.
That's
good. Yeah. And then we'll need one of your
vans too. Similar to what we did when it did the landfill. Okay.
Great.
Here's my cheese here. Is there anything else, folks?
Yes. I don't know if it's necessary or not that we didn't vote to approve February's notes.
Or
I don't think we voted to approve February's meeting minutes.
He's right.
Absolutely right. Good. So if I got sidetracked, a genie showing up. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed?
Danger.
Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
I'm not sure if folks had a chance to see this. We don't need to show it again unless folks want to watch this as you're heading out. Should we roll the tape?
Sure.
Yeah.
Warning, caution, and flammable. It might surprise you to know that there could be household products with these labels in your cupboard or garage. Household hazardous waste is any paints, pesticides, petroleum products, or household chemicals. One of the concerns of household hazardous waste, or HHW, is what to do with the leftovers. Throw it in the garbage and danger collection at disposal workers. Pour it down the drain or on the ground and pollute local water bodies and groundwater. An HHW left around the house poses a danger to children and pets.
There's a proper way to dispose of household hazardous waste, and there's an improper way to dispose of household hazardous waste. What we want people to do is not dispose of household hazardous waste in their garbage and properly dispose of it at the transfer station.
For residents' convenience, there are 3 transfer stations in Clark County that will accept household hazardous waste for free. These facilities also accept recycling for free and garbage at a cost.
Dropping off household hazardous waste at the transfer station is really easy. It's free. The West Main facility that we're at today is open on Fridays and Saturdays. The Central Transfer Station is open on Saturdays and Sundays. And the Washougal Transfer Station is open on the third Saturday of every month, all from 8 to 4.
In the past, the county sponsors satellite HHW collections along with local recycling day events. Unfortunately, the grant funding these collections is tied in a large part to taxes on petroleum products. As the price of gas has gone down, so has the revenue for this grant.
The county discontinued HHW collections at the recycling day events because there was a huge decrease, 50%, in the tornado prevention grant that funds the collection of HHW at these events.
Local recycling day events will continue to happen, and items such as block foam, e-waste, and tires will still be accepted.
Disposing of household hazardous waste is infinitely easier and much more convenient for Clark County residents than it is than disposing of it at a recycling day event. Due to their popularity, we had people waiting well over an hour at the recycling day events, where on most weekends at the 3 transfer stations, you might be waiting 5 minutes to dispose of your household hazardous waste.
For more information on where and when to drop off household hazardous waste, reducing an alternative to HHW, as well as the dates and locations for the 2016 Recycling Day events, visit clarkgreenneighbors.org.
Nice piece.
Yeah.
And Julie also.
Here we are adjourned. That was a record.